The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, fresh from my appearance on Sean Hannity's show. Yes, I live to tell about it. Got into the slugfest, went into the belly of the beast, and lots of people asking why I do it. I do it because somebody has to. Somebody has to get the facts out to these guys, and I swear every time I'm on the program, and each time they have the Chris Horner, anti-global warming believer, anti-environmentalist, and every time it amazes me, he's got yet another crazy book out. You'll hear about that, the latest one called Power Grab. As the storms swirl and the glaciers melt, the facts become more evident. I think they look crazier and dumber than ever, so that's why I do it. We're going to try to play that clip that runs about 6 minutes later on in the program from my appearance there, and it was a slugfest. It always is, but I'm prepared, and I'm feisty, and I hope you think that at least they sounded a bit ill-informed, shall we say. That's a nice way to put it. But one of the things that came up in the conversation, I brought it up because it's pretty dramatic, is a column written by D.R. Tucker. D.R. Tucker is going to be joining me in just a moment. He is a writer, formerly with the Boston Globe and Boston Herald. He writes for UrbanWrite.com, and he is a regular contributor to the From Forum, which he describes as a conservative centrist organization, or at least that's how he describes his own politics. What's so fascinating is he recently wrote a column earlier this month called Confessions of a Climate Change Convert. He says he was defeated by the facts, and in the middle of the slugfest last night, I brought that up, that he actually, Mr. Tucker, read the IPCC report from 2007. He wrote a book, read a book that was written in 2009 called Disconnect, and after delving into the facts of climate change, he came out a believer. So I mentioned that, and you'll hear that in the clip that we're going to play later this hour. But I wanted to welcome D.R. Tucker to the Green Front to hear firsthand about his eco-epiphany and climate conversion. Thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon, Betsy. How are you doing?
Great. Really great to have you. Would just love to hear in the few minutes that you have available, you know, in your own words, sort of what transpired to make you a believer. And isn't it crazy that we are somehow divided into believers and disbelievers of, you know, preponderance of good scientists who are telling us, you know, it's later than we think. But you were on the other side, I might say the dark side, those who are pulling, you know, the blankets over their eyes. That's why I say dark and other connotations as well. I'm not a, you know, knee-jerk liberal or environmentalist. I, you know, love Republicans for, you know, environmental protection. I think that, you know, the people outside the box, the religious communities, evangelicals for climate change action are the most interesting, and that's why I'm really thrilled to have you here, and I'm going to stop talking, and we'll listen to your story.
Well thanks so much. I mean, you mentioned Chris Horner, and it wasn't that long ago that I would have been on Chris Horner's side. In fact, I had an online radio show a while back, and I had actually interviewed Chris Horner when Power Grab came out. But prior to that, I had the opportunity to interview Morris Fiorina of the Hoover Institution, and he put out a book called Disconnect about the ideological segregation that exists in the United States. And one of the examples he cited as an example of ideological segregation is the environmentalist movement and how the origins of the environmentalist movement were Republican. Teddy Roosevelt, Sierra Club was founded by people affiliated with the Republican Party, and up into the 70s, President Nixon and Senator Ed Muskie, the Democratic Senator Ed Muskie, were engaged in a fight over who could claim credit for the Clean Air Act. And then figuring and noted that when we got into the 80s, all of a sudden you start seeing this shift where environmentalism was associated with the Democratic Party and Republicans were associated with being anti-environmentalist. And I asked him, I spoke to him in March of 2010, I had a chance to interview him, and I asked him why that was, and he said that it was because developers and sort of, you know, construction interests got involved with the Republican Party, and they basically said, we don't want any regulation of any kind. We don't want anything interfering with our, essentially with our ability to make money. And if that meant being against environmental regulation, so be it. And it got me to thinking not only about why that change had occurred, but also about the whole larger controversy about climate change and the claims by people such as Roy Spencer and Chris Horner that it's all being exaggerated. So last fall, I had a chance to speak to some of my friends who were involved in the environmentalist movement. There was one friend in particular who actually I went to high school with, and she later went on to become a marine biologist and later an environmental lawyer. And I started discussing my skepticism about, you know, to the extent to which mankind contributed to climate change with her. And she encouraged me to read the 2007 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. And it took me a couple of days to get through the whole thing, and it's unbelievably detailed. And she encouraged me to read it without skepticism, with an open mind. Now, obviously, there was a bit of skepticism in my mind when I started reading it, but as I continued to read it, and I continued to see the documentation of the facts and this preponderance of scientific facts and the demonstrable changes that art that cannot solely be attributed to nature, that are clearly, and they demonstrated in that report, they are clearly man-made, clearly due to pollution, clearly due to how much carbon we're putting in the atmosphere. And I was reading this, and I was saying to myself, oh my God, this is not made up. This is for real.
I know, we wish they were right. We only wish.
And by the time I get to the report, by the time I got to the report's end, I just felt the sense of shame and embarrassment over how ignorant I was of the scientific conclusions. Because when you read the works of Roy Spencer or Chris Horner, they touch a bit upon science, but mostly they talk about politics. And they basically always frame it in the context of you can't believe environmentalists because they want to increase government. That's usually the argument they make. And by the time I finished reading the 2007 IPCC report, you know, I said to myself, the problems addressed in this report, yes, they do require federal action. Yes, they do require, if you want to use the term, a regulatory scheme, yes, they require those regulatory schemes, because, you know, whether you want to call it cap and trade or you know, things like what we have here in the Northeast, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, I mean, these things are necessary. You can't just leave environmental protection and you can't just leave reduction in CO2 to the free market. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, that's how we got into this mess, isn't it?
I hate to use an extreme example, but leaving regulation of the atmosphere to the free market, that's like asking a child molester to put the GPS bracelet on himself.
Funny and not so funny, given that as recently as last night, they're out there, you know, just being, I call them deniosaurs. It's outrageous. And you know, they started with this, you know, latest poll that shows, you know, worldwide more people are, well, fewer people are concerned about climate change than ever before. They failed to mention that 53% of Americans are quite concerned. But I was hoping they would ask me, well, why do you think that is, Ms. Rosenberg? Climate change certainly is not real if people are disbelieving it, believing it less. I wanted to say, because too many of them are watching your show, Sean, why are you, you know, spreading these lies and disinformation campaign, and shame on you.
You know, what it is, I think there's a psychological thing going on here, and this has sort of been part of my experience. If you concede that the science is real, I don't believe truly that you can remain libertarian or even conservative. You are forced into either a liberal camp or a moderate camp. I had a bit of a debate with David Frum during the editing of the piece, because he felt I was being a bit too pessimistic in my original declaration in the original draft that one cannot be a conservative and an environmentalist or a libertarian and environmentalist. He argued, and I recognized there was a valid argument he made, which is that from a property rights standpoint, one can be both a libertarian and also feel that, you know, based on property rights, you don't have a right to pollute somebody else's property or damage somebody else's property. And from that perspective, you can set up regulation to prevent carbon emissions or what have you. But I think to a committed libertarian or to a committed conservative, to somebody committed to the notion of shrinking the size and scope of the federal government, if you concede that the science is real, you cannot then turn around and say there's a limited government solution to this. You have to concede regulatory action. And I think that's something that's very, very scary for a lot of people, because you essentially have to give up your own ideology. To a certain extent, I don't consider myself a limited government guy anymore. I still think of myself as center-right politically, but in terms of shrinking the size and scope of the federal government, what I say is that, you know, government that's too big is dangerous, but government that's too small is too dangerous too, because if the government is so small that it can't protect our air and our water, well, that's a problem. That's certainly not being pro-life, to allow our air and our water to be contaminated, to allow more acidity in our water, to allow plants to be damaged by excess carbon. I mean, that's not being pro-life. I know a lot of conservatives say they're pro-life. You know, disregarding environmental protection is certainly not being pro-life, in my view.
And I always wonder, why does ideology trump survivability if you believe the science? And why shouldn't we? And those who are so committed to their ideology that they've got their heads in the sand and eyes and ears covered, you know, I wonder about that commitment, and I wonder if they should be committed, really, because this has been going on too long, and the science is overwhelming, it's clear. I want to read a quote from your column about your conversion, if I may. You say, I came away from the report convinced that climate alteration poses a critical threat to our health and way of life, and that policies that provide a real or implicit price of carbon are in fact necessary from an economic and a moral standpoint to mitigate that threat. Such policies, most notably the much maligned concept of cap and trade, should not be considered job killers but life savers. I love that.
Thank you.
Well said.
And I wrote that within the context of one of the controversies going on in my home state of Massachusetts with Senator Scott Brown. When Senator Brown was a state senator, he was for the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is essentially a statewide cap and trade program. But once he started running for the United States Senate, he started running down the concept of cap and trade, basically, you know, washing his hands of his previous acceptance of the science. And, you know, earlier this month, he voted to sort of wipe out the EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gases. And there's been a lot of environmental activists here in Massachusetts. There's one activist in particular who runs a site called Paint Brown Green, trying to get Brown to at least reconsider his reconsideration. And I think to myself that not only from a moral perspective and an environmental perspective is it short-sighted for Brown to do what he's doing and sort of joining in with the sort of anti-environmentalist thrust of his party, it's also politically short-sighted too, because I'm trying to recall the specific who did this poll, but there was a recent poll showing that there are clear majorities, or at least a plurality of voters in Massachusetts, who do believe that the climate science is real. So therefore, if he pushed for federal regulatory action to prevent damage to our environment, he would politically benefit. His re-election would be assured. But I guess some people like to live dangerously. In more ways than one.
And we are living dangerously by not addressing these very urgent, complex issues, the climate change issue being the mother of all the challenges, and the great exacerbator, as someone called it. So this isn't funny. This isn't just another issue that you can toss back and forth. Now that you've had a change in your emotional climate, and you are a very powerful spokesperson because of, you know, how far you were to the left or right, aligning yourself with Chris Horner, and now you have seen the green light. What are you going to do about it? Hopefully not be quiet. What are your plans? Because you're going to be much sought after, because this is exactly the kind of story that we've needed. We, not the liberals, not the, just the greens, but we who believe that science should be, listened to. Scientists should be, you know, the credible group that they are. And when I hear allegations that scientists and environmentalists, you know, are out for the money and the grants, it's preposterous. I for one, have been doing my green radio programs at a huge personal cost. No one's paid me to do this, and I'm not stupid. I believe in this passionately, and I believe that, you know, the green wave is coming, and media will catch up soon. We're going to be speaking with someone from Media Matters in the second half hour about the climate misinformation campaign and how successful they've been and what needs to be done to stop it. It's just gone on too long. It's enough already, because they're having impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I'm working with an entity known as the Citizens Climate Lobby. I made reference to that in the piece. They're pushing for essentially a carbon tax, or the way they characterize it as a cap and dividend program. And
fees and dividends, yes. Rachel yeah. Guinness is a good friend of mine. She's in charge of the lobby here in Marin County. So go ahead and tell about that, because that's I think that's a win-win, something that no one can genuinely say is a bad idea.
Yes, they've advanced this idea, and they believe that it has the potential of having more of a bipartisan push than simply cap and trade, which has been so denigrated by Republicans. Even Republicans invented cap and trade, so we're working with here in our region, working with our various congressmen, and also they were scheduled to have a meeting, I think, earlier this week. Senator Kerry, they're trying to arrange a meeting with Senator Brown. I told one of them good luck with that, and basically to try to come up with this idea that. I believe a couple of years ago, even Arthur Laffer, the father of the Laffer curve, the father of supply side economics, proposed a carbon tax or cap and dividend as a more appropriate alternative to cap and trade, as a means of reducing carbon emissions, and also incentivizing developing alternative forms of energy and alternative, you know, ways to have the sort of energy we need without doing the environmental damage that current forms of energy do.
Oh, sounds like we lost D.R. Tucker. I am sorry about that, but yes, come back and we'll conclude in just a moment. I think we can hear you.
Yes, I'm still here, I believe.
Yes. You just went away for a second. So finish your thought, and then I've got to get on to my next guest, but I would love to follow up with you in the future, because I'm fascinated by what you're talking about.
Sure. What I was going to say towards the end is that cap and dividend is an idea that has been supported even by Arthur Laffer of the Laffer curve, and the guy is kind of the father of supply side economics, as a way of reducing carbon emissions and also nudging us towards the development of alternative energy sources. So it's a win-win from both, in his view, from a conservative perspective and from an environmental perspective. And this is why the Citizens Climate Lobby feels that this cap and dividend idea is the way to go. So I'm definitely working with them, and hopefully we will see how far it's going to go. They're trying to arrange meetings with as many congressmen and senators as possible by this June, and I'm very confident that they will have success.
Okay, and last question. I think none of the Tea Partiers, to a person, to a T, if you will, believe that climate change is a real threat. A few of us are talking about starting a Green Tea Party for those of us who are steamed that climate change has been taken off the front burner, and since we're in hot water, as we say, before we reach the boiling point, we think we should steep ourselves in science and information and inspiration, and not let, you know, green issues be, you know, anywhere but top of agenda for the 2012 election. And we cannot afford to have leaders who don't understand these very urgent, complex problems. Again, global warming being at the top of that list, and yet some 30 of them were just elected. So what are you going to do to contribute to making sure that we get legislators in who understand, if nothing else, the perils of continuing to ignore climate change and continue with the status quo business as usual approach?
Well, in addition to the work with CCL, I'm definitely going to keep on writing and keep on speaking, because you're right that we're in an era now where the ideology has just become so rampant in terms of trying to get rid of anything that's perceived as being the regulatory evil, that you're going to see more and more of this sort of denialism. And I think that the more they deny, the more those who recognize the scientific realities have to speak out and have to sort of increase the volume on their megaphone, so to speak.
Well, you know, the facts are becoming more evident every day, you know, as the storms continue to mount and the death tolls and damage continue to mount. I mean, it's almost a daily thing on the Today Show with the latest record-breaking storm. If it's not snow on the East Coast in the winter, it's these killer tornadoes and twisters in unusual places with such velocity and ferocity that they're breaking records. I mean, so they're on the wrong side, and time will tell, but we just don't have a lot of time.
Australia, which was awful earlier this year.
Australia, Russia, Pakistan. So I hope you'll continue to go forward, go loudly, and be bold, because we need your voice. And I thank you for what you have done to really, I think, raise the argument to a level which it needs to be, which is this should not be about ideology. This is about it's not political. We should not be playing politics with the planet. This is urgent. It's serious. And lead or get out of the way, but don't obstruct and obscure.
Or to reposition an old line, politics stops at the water's edge. but when the sea levels are increasing, boy, politics really needs to stop, and we need to come together to solve this this threat that we face.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your great contribution to the conversation, and I hope we will continue it. D.R. Tucker, check him out at the FRUMforum.com. We will have a link on my website, thegreenfront.com, to his fabulous article about his climate conversion. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with the head of the Pachamama Alliance. That was one of the groups that Sean Hannity called communist last night on the show. I happen to be a proud member of the Pachamama Alliance and their 4 Years Go campaign. You're going to hear about that. And the Rights of Nature movement, people meeting as we speak on how to take that forward. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg.